pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning, 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the show. If you so desire, still to come, Michael Lowry from the Alabama poll, and we'll go over some of these election results and some of the trends. As I said, the one alarming one kind of went unnoticed initially was just a Democrat turnout being as strong as it was on Tuesday night, but also the surprises we saw, and we'll walk through that with Mike in about 30 minutes from now. In the meantime, 251-343-0106. Let's go through the rest of these texts because there are a bunch here. Unnamed texter. Let's take up a collection to help Quinn go to Ukraine so he can help them with their strategy and superiority. Quinn in Ukraine, I don't know. A named texter, Parker exhibits all the symptoms of Trump derangement syndrome, poor Democrat view, points, and solutions. Squirrel ring, good gosh, Parker Griffin wishes everyone was so disgruntled with the president. I guess he would prefer an absent Secretary of Defense like Lloyd Austin just because Hegseth was a straight talker. I haven't heard a guest speak like he's out of breath and about to fall out since Dale East was giving the Lanyap report. I don't know what that's in reference to. Unnamed texter, I'm sorry, but what a fool. Let's capitulate all of Iran's demands. Additionally, why don't we send them a few pallets of cash? Yeah, I had to disagree with the Obama approach to Iran and sending John Kerry over there and having Andrea Mitchell stationed outside of some outposts in Geneva. I just did not work. I don't know how much of a threat they were, but apparently, let's just acknowledge this. They were a threat. Otherwise, the Obama administration would not have sent them pallets of cash. I mean, I don't think Obama and John Kerry and that crowd, when they woke up one morning, hey, how can we send some money to Iran? They really thought that they were going to achieve some sort of success. But they would, by doing that, they acknowledged there is a problem there. So I think, like, as far as these discussions go, Democrats and Republicans would agree that that's an issue. It's not being hyped up, exaggerated for the sake of some kind of warfare or some kind of handout. That there is something there that has to be dealt with. Now, we could disagree with Republicans and Democrats, but the two parties would agree that you got to do something about Iran. Something. The something is what is debated. And the problem with the Obama approach, even if you deep down thought it was the right way to go, two problems, actually. Number one, you're never going to get the Israelis to agree to it. I don't even think you could bring in a different government than the Netanyahu government that would have signed on to the Obama approach. But number two, the Obama approach was predicated on this idea that it would last beyond his presidency, that a new president would not come in and alter that strategy. And that's clearly was not a reliable way of thinking given the election of Donald Trump. You can't have a 30, 40 year solution to Iran. Politics change. People change. Their minds change about what should be done there. Unnamed texter, that Democrat congressman is a complete babbling buffoon. really, he has to be the most ignorant idiot I've ever heard. Obama shipped him in the middle of the night, millions that way to handle it. All right. Yeah. What a dork. And I'm sure a lot of that, it was laundered back to Obama. That's Gary from Somerdale. DI texture 2022, Russia invading Ukraine. 2026, Trump invading Iran. Jerry, you definitely have a lot of Jew haters and Tucker lovers out there, Jeff. Apparently, the Queers for Palestine chapter at South Alabama is alive and well. To say that it's like a pro-Palestinian thing to oppose an Iran strike. Look, I think, Jerry, and I don't know how serious you are about this discussion, but the October 7th terror attack changed the world. And I think the Palestinians and they were acting as a proxy of the Iranian government. That terror attack doesn't happen without Iran. That got the Israelis up. It some of the horrible things that happened there. And you got to deal with Palestine. You got to deal with radical elements in Gaza. You have to. We've already established that the Israeli people, wherever they're from, doesn't matter. But they're there. And they're going to stay there. And they have a right to exist there. You can't change that. That's where I get all some of these discussions. That's where you lose me. Like, look, they're there. What do you want them to do? Same thing be said for the Palestinians, I suppose. But they should not have acted so aggressively toward Iran. That's when it all fell apart. That's what makes Netanyahu possible. And you have to deal with it. Maybe not in the way we want to deal with it. But it's got to be dealt with. It's going to be dealt with. Things happen in this world. We wish it wouldn't have happened. But they took the first shot. I think that October 7th terror attack was their 9/11. And ever since then, it kind of set in motion some dominoes to start to fall. The problem is those dominoes impact our livelihood, our domestic policy. Unnamed texter, what does Mr. Parker think death to America means? But a nuclear Iran would be the same as Russia and China. You are committing elder abuse when he comes on. I don't think so. I think he's happy to come on. Mike, do the people who blame every time someone isn't 100% approving a Trump administration of TDS ever really self-reflect on America's current situation? It's undeniable that the current American policies aren't what we were sold in 2024. And the vast majority of people see it. He also writes, Parker is wrong that it's Trump's style that has turned off many from him. Oh, we already read this one. Ricky, Epstein has pictures of Obama and Trump and all our politicians that our government is totally compromised and all in bed together to rob our dollars dry. They give us a U.S. digital currency prison. All nukes are fake, Jeff. It's a scam to bring digital currency. The 1% are getting super rich. Why the middle class has been destroyed. All wars are bankers' wars, and USA, China, and Russia, and Iran are draining the dollar dry. And then they want digital currency and slaves to work for free. It's all a scam, Jeff. Still waiting to drop dead from the COVID vaccination, Ricky. Finally, Mommy Issues is back. Jeff, you may not believe this, but of all the radio personalities, I actually like your show. 70% of the time, your assessments are spot on. Look, I love a lot of the stance Democrats take, like the boys in the girls' locker room, amongst many others. It's damn hard being an independent voter. While Jeff, listening to you and your callers and texts chastise me saying I don't take Republicans serious, the hypocrisy is astounding. Well, you could separate me from your the texters. Texters are entitled to their views just as you are, but when you say they are a bunch of uneducated rubes who can't read past the sixth grade, what kind of response do you expect? But you're kind of a voice in the wilderness here, and not in a good way necessarily. It's conservative talk radio, mommy issues. So, of course, we're going to be conservative. I try to take the liberal viewpoint seriously. If I didn't, I wouldn't have guys like Parker on. I at least want to hear it. Or be exposed to it. It's just, I can't get on board with it. I don't have all the answers on Iran. But every administration, Democrat or Republican, has tried to deal with the Iranians. Some better than others. And, well, I don't know what the solution is here. But I do find it interesting. Democrats don't really have an answer to it either. Now, I can't imagine a Democrat administration launching military strikes against Iran. That's just hard for me to see the way Trump has. But we're giving it a go. Unnamed texter talking about Obama is about like talking about my two ex-wives boring. Scroll over, Reem. People pretend October 7th didn't happen and Israel bullies all the little peaceful Aladdins and Jasmines. They're little normal mommies and brats complaining about Israel writing to free Palestine. Yeah, you know, and this, like, American pro-Palestinian movement just seems to me like a symptom of Trump derangement syndrome. Like a reason to be against Trump, another reason to not like Republicans. I just don't, it's not authentic to me. It also shows kind of a lack of understanding. I think there's this assumption that the United States can get Israel to do whatever we want because we're supplying them with their armaments, we're propping them up somehow. And I don't know that to be the case. And I think they are acting in their self-interest. Now, is that in our self-interest? Not necessarily. But it does impact us. That you have a number of people that who have votes that count as much as yours, who really believe in the Jewish state. And they were willing to go do what they got to do to protect them. But the reality is it has an impact, some unintended consequences going the other way. Text line, keep them coming, 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk, 106.5.
Fight to be a man. There's someone for everyone.
Spend my dollar. Park in a holler neath the mountain moonlight. Hold her up tight. Make a little loving. A little turn of loving on a Mason-Dixon line.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for hanging out on this Friday before we head off for Memorial Day weekend. We will not be doing the show. You'll have Fisher House on Monday. So we will We will reconvene on Tuesday. Tuesday, we'll have a couple other guests to be named later. I haven't even thought about next week's shows, but that's coming up on Tuesday, and we'll have an idea of who is running in what congressional district 1, 2, 6, and 7. But so far, it looks like no one really new popping out. I guess I can hit refresh because they got till 5 o'clock today to qualify for the August 11th special primary election. And we got, same as we had a couple hours ago, Jerry Carl, John Mills, Austin Sidwell in the first, Hampton Harris, Brett Marcus, Joshua McKee in the second, Case Dixon, Gary Palmer in the sixth, and no one in the Republican, on the Republican side has raised the qualifying money to run against Terry Sewell in the 7th district. That may be interesting. I need to check the Democrat site, see if they have anybody running against her in 7. Mommy issues. A lot of mommy issues today. Democrats don't have an answer for Iran either. However, Trump and Whiskey Pete don't seem to have an actual plan. In fact, the optics, we are losing this war. I don't think we're losing it. And I think it may not be going, it may be hitting us, impacting us in ways that we don't like. But it is abundantly clear the Iranians have taken more casualties and more of a hit to their power base and infrastructure than we have. We're not losing the war. It's just not, it's not Venezuela. Mike, the solution in the Middle East is to deal with one nation that is the middle of every conflict. That the majority of people's opinion that aren't old and over 55. That is why Israel and Trump and Zionist administration did it now. The coming generations are going to support the nation that was built on stolen Christian and Persian land for Europeans. Well, what is your prescription here, Mike? Just cede Israel back to Syria and Jordan and Egypt? I don't understand what you want. Because I don't think that's I don't think that's a realistic solution here. That we have to accept the existence of Israel. May not like it. You may think it was ill-advised in the last century when they formed it, but it's not going anywhere. You're never going to get the Michael solution here. Do you leave them on their own? Do you not think that they would look for help from somebody else? Backstrap, mommy needs to take mommy issues phone away. Enough self-degradation for one day. He's got a lot to say, a lot of opinions. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. But he's got a lot of opinions today. Never have enough of those. The key to talk radio success from my mentor, Dale Jackson, is just have opinions. Really? Never, ever saw myself as a radio guy. Not in a million years. But I would be a guest, and I guess I left a lasting impression. And he said, hey, you should have a radio show. COVID happened, got a little squirrely with Cumulus, and Sean took me in for whatever reason a couple of years later. So here we are, still having opinions, but everybody's got them. I just, that's the take here. Mike, let them stand on their 2 feet without us giving them munitions to kill Christians attending school in a non-ran school in southern Lebanon. Can they stand on their own 2 feet? Or would they look elsewhere beyond the United States? I think that was certainly the fear during the Cold War. Maybe it's a Cold War mentality that we need to walk away from. I don't know, but I don't think that's going to be acceptable to the voters. voters in this country. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Like a rhinestone cowboy, riding out on a horse in a star-spangled rodeo. Like a rhinestone cowboy, getting cards and letters from people I don't even know, and offers coming over.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning. Time permitting, you still send in your text 251-343-0106, and we'll get to those over the course of what's left of today's program. Joining us now on the line, he is the purveyor of the Alabama poll. Been watching this election cycle very close. I'm sure has some thoughts on some of the trends we've seen. But Michael Lowry joins us on the line. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing well, Jeff. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. I appreciate the time. Well, let's kick it off here. You've been out in the field a little bit. Well, what are you hearing or what are you seeing out there?
You know, it's interesting. There was a lot of money spent in these races, a lot of interest, obviously, among voters. You know, I think that we saw the numbers out of the Secretary of State's office that the total number of voters were about where they usually are for these type of elections. And yet, right before we got to the election itself, there were still a lot of undecided voters out there.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and I didn't realize this till maybe 24 hours ago. You had, you know, kind of baseline turnout, but you had an unusually high number, I thought, of Democrat voters show up, and that kind of balanced things out.
Yeah, I think that on the Democrat side, there's certainly a level of intensity these days. I mean, the war in Iran, prices the way they are, the perceived atrocities of the Trump administration. You know, there's a lot that Democrats are just, you know, wadded up about. And so, you know, this is their opportunity to come out and say, hey, we're still here. You know, it's the one chance they really have to be relevant in Alabama as far as elections are concerned.
Well, one thing I think interesting is how the shifting demographics, and that's in part, I think you saw a couple upsets, legislative races on the ballot down here that I think it's just a change in population and the moving of lines, trying to keep these districts Republican. But man, Huntsville, Madison County, totally different than it was just even 4 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, Huntsville has seen such tremendous growth with the space and defense industries just, you know, absolutely killing it at this point. And, you know, when you look at cities that are among the most livable and where do, you know, young workers want to live, Huntsville checks a lot of those boxes and makes a lot of those lists. And so that population really is shifting and it's changing. And I think it may take an election cycle or two for us to kind of figure out who's there now and what is it that they're after exactly. And then you can layer in the fact that voters these days tend to want the new candidate. You can tell them that you have the most successful person representing you that has ever existed in the world in electoral politics, and they have done more for you than anybody else in the world ever could, and then give them the choice of somebody new, and, you know, almost 5 out of 10 times they want the new person.
Well, I think going forward, though, you look at and you're Republican, and, you know, I two things, two of those seats up there. And I think the Tom Butler seat that could go blue. And then I think that Marilyn Lands is in good shape. I have a Doug Jones on the ballot. Probably he's not going to win statewide, but he's probably going to have some coattails in some places. And the other one, that I think Will Barfoot trying to run in a new district against Tabitha Iser is going to be problematic.
Yeah, I think that Will, and, you know, in full honesty, Will's an old friend of mine. We sat next to each other in law school, and I think that what Will was hoping for was that the courts would redraw the lines based on the Calais decision and what they're doing, you know, with the congressional districts, because that is a tough seat. When you start looking at West Montgomery and folding all of that in, and then he loses his base there in, you know, Elmore County, and I don't remember if he takes part of Autauga or not, but, you know, the bottom line is that that district is not super friendly to him. Now, the advantage that you've got in some of those districts is that, you know, local politics is still local. You know, can somebody get out there and remind the voter that, hey, I'm a neighbor and I know what you're going through and I'm working for you. So, you know, if these candidates can localize the races and make them about who they are and what they've done for that area rather than, you know, President Trump and Republicans nationally, you know, if they get past that anger and can keep it local, then they've got a shot. But you're right, those districts have changed. And, you know, this old orthodoxy among Republicans in that it is the way it is and it'll always be that way. Well, it isn't anymore.
Well, tell us this, AL1, this new congressional map, what are you seeing there? The election results, it was, you know, we got to see kind of a snapshot, but right at the very end, Rep Marcus announced he wasn't running anymore for that seat. And I don't know how much that impacted the ballot, but the new districts and what do you think is going to happen there?
You know, I think we go back to kind of the status quo ante, meaning that we go back to the Wiregrass gets their congressman, Mobile, Baldwin counties, that area gets your congressman back. And I think Alabama overall is stronger for it. You know, when you were splitting South Alabama, actually combining it, you know, bringing in the Wiregrass to the Mobile area, I think that that hurt Alabama overall, because now we've got a situation where I suspect Rhett Marcus is probably the front runner there in Alabama too. His strength is in the Wiregrass, and that probably helps him consolidate the vote over there, just like it helps Jerry Carl consolidate the vote back in Alabama 1. You know, ironically, I was in the field this week in Alabama 1 and just got my results back this morning. So you're the first person that I've even talked to about this, but Jerry's in a very strong position to retake his old congressional seat. And by old seat, I mean almost the same district he represented, you know, previously.
It's and looking at the map, and it's kind of fascinating, but if you look at Tuesday night's map and the AL1 race, you draw a straight line through the middle of the district. They split, I think, a difference of 18 votes, Covington County, that's Andalusia Op. That's right in the heart of the district. But everything on the east side was Rhett Marcus, and everything on the west side was Jerry Carl. And it was that way with the Barry Moore, Jerry Carl race. I mean, those are just, if there's ever, you need evidence of two different communities of interest, that's it right there.
Oh, completely. And if you go back even further, I ran a campaign in the old Alabama 2 back in 2008, which wound up being, when we were in the primary, it was Jay Love out of Montgomery in the River region versus at the time Senator Harry Ann Smith out of the Wiregrass. And you could have drawn that same line probably just a little south of Troy. Because the Wiregrass has always wanted its candidate to be the candidate for that district. You know, when Terry Everett held that seat, he was a Wiregrass guy. Then, you know, it opened up, and from that point forward, it became a Montgomery person. But yeah, I mean, talk about regionally. The Wiregrass is its own entity. It wants its people. And so, you know, it's not surprising that that split was like that. And I think that this new map better reflects that.
And that's like one of the things, I know Martha Roby took a lot of shots, but she did something that a lot of people have failed to do. And she was able to really shore up support down there. And I always, like, it always was a curiosity to me, but then I saw her a little bit on the trail down there, or, you know, just giving speeches, and it kind of made sense. But that is, you know, such a thing that the people in that part of the state are very, very loyal to their candidate. And then, like, the night that Barry Moore was up against Jerry Carl, some of those boxes in Henry County were coming in like 80-20 for Barry Moore. And I knew that, you know, there's not as many people there, but man, that's for an AL1 candidate to overcome that. You really got to run up the score on this side. And now that proved to be very tough for Jerry Carl.
Yeah, it's always going to be that way, I think. It just, you know, we've talked about it in the past, and that Mobile is a different part of Alabama, a different mindset, a different geography. You know, everything about it is different. It has, you know, historically been the Catholic part of the state, whereas the rest of the state is probably Protestant/Baptist. And the candidates from Mobile have a hard time of breaking out into other areas. And then you add on top of that, that how politically insular, you know, the Wiregrass is. And it is hard for somebody to come over like that, that, you know, it is the hometown boy or girl. You know, Katie Britt has that advantage in the Wiregrass.
Barry Moore on Tuesday night. I mean, you look at the map, and it was solidly Barry Moore there. There's something about that tribalism that really shows up in Alabama politics in that part of the state.
Yeah, well, we like our teams. You know how it is, Jeff. And Barry did well statewide. I mean, if you look at it, I think he won almost every county out there. So, you know, Barry enters his Senate runoff in a seat of power, a power position. But at the same time, if I'm him, I'm still a little bit worried because there were a lot of voters, and I think he wound up at around, 39%, if memory serves?
Right.
You know, and if that's the case, that means 61% of the voters didn't support him. So, yeah, he's got the shortest distance to go to get to 50%, but, you know, out of those 61, where do you go to get them? So that's a race that I'm still interested in and still think could be up in the air.
Well, it's Jared Hudson's dominance in the Birmingham, the Jefferson County in particular, but the Birmingham DMA. And it's a short runoff election cycle. You have your support centralized geographically. And then what I think Jared Hudson's lane is such that just you try to maintain your support statewide that you got as much as you can. That's probably the name of the game for all these guys. But if you could just run up the score in Birmingham and run it up in a way, I mean, that's your lane. That's how you win a statewide race if you're him. That's where he's needing to perform well to make up that difference.
Yeah, I think that you're right there, and I think that Huntsville is a bit of an open question there because, you know, Steve Marshall was a North Alabama guy. So the folks up there may be looking for who's their candidate now. So if I were the Hudson campaign, you know, I'd be pushing the outsider status. I'd be, you know, looking to kind of cement myself as the national security guy, the guy who can help the defense industry here in the state. And, you know, I think that would play well up in North Alabama. And conversely, if I'm Barry Moore, I'm trying to capitalize on the endorsement from President Trump, because I think that the one criticism that I had of him during this initial race was he was telling everybody that he had the Trump endorsement, but he didn't explain, you know, to my mind, why he had that endorsement. What I would have liked to have seen him do is say, hey, I'm Barry Moore, and I know that gas prices are too high, grocery prices are too high, that your dollar isn't buying as much as it used to, and I'm going to help you fix that. And that's why President Trump endorsed me. You know, I wanted to see that connection between the endorsement and why a voter should come to him, not just President Trump likes me, so you should too. So if he can capture that narrative in this runoff, then I think he wins it going away.
Back to the congressional races on August 11th. I mean, we have 6 hours or so until qualifying closes. But is there a lane for anybody else that hasn't already declared in this cycle to run against either Jerry Carl or Rhett Marcus, you think?
You know, that's a tough one because my answer is going to be a little bit of a cop-out. Who can put the money into the race? Because otherwise, I think Rhett Marcus and Jerry Carl are in the driver's seat. You know, the polling that I did today, Jerry comes in at a strong 37%. And I ran it in a five-candidate field because I wanted to see, you know, most of these people probably aren't going to run, but I wanted to see if there was somebody out there who could kind of capture that lane. And I think that the thing that you would have is, can you get President Trump to come in and endorse you? And I don't know that there's enough certainty that he would do something like that. And can you raise a couple million dollars? And I'm not sure that the money's out there to go against these guys. So, you know, intellectually, yes. My heart says no, though.
Yeah, because you look at the finite resources and how many these can the money's really been soaked up by the gubernatorial election. The Tommy Tuberville has created a war chest. And I hear this complaint from candidates all over the state that they maxed out to Tommy Tuberville, not maxed out because you can give whatever you want, but in a sense that their bank account for this type of activity is depleted, and they went with Tuberville. And you're finding that to be difficult. And I can't imagine to put on top of that an additional election and go and knock on doors or go call and ask for more money that it may not be there anymore.
Yeah, and when you couple in that the federal rules are different than the state rules and that federal dollars are capped at, you know, roughly, I don't remember exactly, but it's probably around $3,000 a person. So if you've got to raise $2 million, you're having to go in and raise it at $3,000 chunks from an individual or $5,000 from a PAC. And, you know, so at that point, it becomes a volume game, not necessarily a quantity of how much somebody can give, but rather how many people can you get to give. So that becomes a real factor. And then, you know, again, looking in the Mobile area there with Jerry Carl, one of the things that is out there, you know, Jerry's been told by House Republicans that if you capture your seat back, we're going to give you your seat back on the Appropriations Committee. And to your earlier question about can somebody take him on, yeah, you can. But really, the people down there are pretty smart. And they know from going back to Sonny Callahan way back in the day, you know, what a seat on the Appropriations Committee can mean locally. And to have a congressman with that kind of promise, it's hard to vote against that.
Well, Mike, we got to leave it there. We're up against a break. But folks want to find out more about your polling. Where can they look?
I'm on the web at alabamapoll.com. And, you know, Jeff, as always, just appreciate the chance to get to talk politics with you and hope you and your family have a great Memorial Day weekend. And, you know, for all the veterans and everybody who served out there, that's my father, my brother included, you know, thank you. Really appreciate everyone.
Mike, thanks for making time. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Have a good time. In one day, a wealthy customer bought the Indian maid. He took her home so far away.
Then he cried just south of Nashville, and he turned that car around.
He said, "This is where you get off, boy, because I'm going back to Alabama." As I stepped out of that Cadillac, I said, "Mister, many thanks." He said, "You don't have to call me Mr. Mister. The whole world called me Hank." He said, "Drifter, can you make..."
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on what's left of this Friday morning. Coming up on the Tuesday program, we'll be back on Tuesday. We'll have Will Hampson for sure, but a couple of other guests to be named later. We'll see where Tuesday or the weekend, the long extended weekend, takes us. You'll have Fisher House in place of the Jeff Porter Show on Monday, so hopefully you'll tune in to that. Jerry, Mike is definitely a card-carrying member. You definitely have a lot of we already read that already. Mike, referring to Michael. And then Ricky, Thomas Massey for president 2028. So there you have it. Coming up here shortly, Midday Mobile, Sean Sullivan taking the lead here. What you got, Sean?
Right, I guess I'm going to see Ricky at the Massey for president meeting here.
Y'all can run the chapter of the Mobile County Thomas Massey committee.
Yeah, we're in agreement. So, there we go. Ricky, and also, qualifying here ends, what, at 5? Is it 5 today?
5 o'clock, yeah.
All right, so we'll talk a little bit, like you have, about who's qualified. We'll get that before the ink is dry. Also, coming up in the second half of this hour, a story that you might remember about what went down in Bay Minette between an elected official and an attorney, and now a court decision on it. Well, Harry Still from Bay Minette joins us on the show about 12:30. Then coming up, we'll talk about what's going on in Somerdale for Memorial Day and elsewhere around our area. That and a whole lot more coming up on Midday Mobile.
Real quick, we have a new entry into the one race. Lucas Berger. I don't know who that is, but Lucas Berger. And then AL7, Amy Aiken and David Perry on the Republican side. I got to get out of here. We'll try to do better on Tuesday. Sorry, Phyllis, forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.